Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
The Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Scott Bowers, the CEO at Prosper Trading Academy. We usually like to start the show talking a little bit about where the markets are generally. Let's do that, Scott. Things are going pretty well these days, right?
Overall, yeah, I would say that people have to be very, very happy with how the market has reacted this year, especially in the face of, you know, lots of headwinds in terms of interest rates, inflation, even though it's coming down, is still there. And just, you know, there's a big concern that I have, John, that I don't know that the market has really taken into account yet about all the debt that has piled up. Consumer debt at all-time records, and the market has done unbelievably well. I do think that is going to become a problem later in the year, maybe even the early part of next year. But for right now, market's looking good.
Somebody told us yesterday, though, that the savings rate is up, and I said, yeah, but we've got all of this debt, and we're going to have to start paying on our student loans. I guess one does not offset the other, huh?
No, it for sure does not offset. And yes, savings rates are up. I mean, it was just, you know, a year ago or so, or 18 months ago, where you had money in the bank and you didn't get paid anything. So savings rates are up. But again, that debt problem, which I think we do have, at some point that is going to start to affect the economy and the market.
How does it affect the market? I mean, I'll have less money to spend, so I guess I could figure this out on my own, right? If I have less money to spend, then I'm going to buy fewer products or services, and
but,
therefore the companies that sell those things won't be so profitable.
I do think there's going to start being a lot of defaults also. So of all this debt that is piled up, you know, if there starts to be a considerable amount of defaults or an uptick in the amount of defaults, you know, that's going to affect the banking system, that's going to affect the financial system. You know, the buy now, pay later effect to the economy that has grown so tremendously over the last couple of years. You know, there's the good and the bad. We've seen the good, that it sparked a lot of economic, you know, spending out there. The bad is, boy, when people have to, you know, pay it off, it's not going to be a good thing.
So you think we've peaked?
I don't know that we've peaked. I do think we have a little bit more to go here. I really think that a nice 5% pullback or so would be a very healthy correction. It would be nothing for people to panic over. It's the natural course of how the market moves. But I think we've overheated a little bit.
Are there some stocks or sectors in the market that you think are maybe more vulnerable and some that are going to prove to be more resilient?
Absolutely. I do think that some of the consumer stocks, like retail stocks, I think they are very vulnerable at this point, because as people start to pull back on their spending, you know, that's going to hit home right away. And we've already seen a change in the consumer spending habits from spending on goods to more so on services or experiences. So,
yeah,
you know, people are not necessarily buying more clothes or things like that. They're buying these experiences. So I think some of the retailers going into back to school season, and then obviously with, you know, the holiday season just right around the corner, I think those are very vulnerable stocks, like a Target, a Kohl's, you know, big retailers like that.
Do you think the NASDAQ is more vulnerable to these things or less vulnerable?
Well, the NASDAQ is going to be more vulnerable to a continuation of a high interest rate, you know, economy that we're in right now. Because the NASDAQ stocks in particular, they're high growth stocks, right? They're not necessarily making money now. They're investing for the future. So the more that it costs them to borrow money, to invest, kind of the worse it is for them. So I do think we'll get through this. I do think if we really do see the Fed coming out at their next meeting and saying, you know, we're tackling this inflation problem really well and we're going to pause again, that could spark another rally in the NASDAQ. But until that point, I think we've kind of peaked in the NASDAQ.
Scott Bowers, the CEO at Prosper Trading Academy, where they teach you how to do that. ProsperTrading.com. Okay, Scott, really interesting. Thanks for your help today.
John, you've got it. Always a pleasure talking to you.
On WGN, Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at CNET. We were talking about, I want to say Twitter. Do you say X Corporation or do you still call it Twitter, Bree?
I'm still calling it Twitter. I haven't quite gotten used to this yet.
You know, when the Washington football team changed its name, everybody honored the new name. I guess that's a different thing. But I guess the Sears Tower isn't called the Sears Tower anymore. Here in Chicago, some of us still call it the Sears Tower, but technically that's not correct. It's a but X Corporation doesn't roll off the tongue as easily as Twitter does.
No, and there really wasn't a reason for this particularly, like there were in those other cases. I think it's another, attempt to grab attention and to kind of, signal a shift. It does look very weird on my phone, though, when I look at the little app icon that's popped up.
I suppose somebody could do a study about what colors and images and words are most inviting. And a blue and white image of a bird, to me, is very appealing. And a black and white X is less so. X is suing a group that studies the effects of hate speech. What's happening here?
Well, I mean, Elon Musk is behind this, of course. And, his company, whatever you want to call it, is accusing the Center for Countering Digital Hate of making what they call troubling and baseless claims. That they say that Elon Musk says is being done to harm Twitter and its digital ad business. It cites certain research that this group has published, but you could argue that Twitter has definitely had problems with its ad business before now. And for someone who claims he's a free speech absolutist, He's coming down on their right to do research and their right to speak.
He's not a free speech absolutist. I know he says that, and he absolutely allows things that they didn't used to allow, but he's not a free speech absolutist. But nobody's accusing him of hate speech here. They're saying that they've pulled down criticism of the hate speech that is on his platform, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's about, that their research looks at what Twitter has done to counter hate speech, and it is very critical of that. But I think a lot of people will agree that, there has been an uptick in hate speech and spam and a lot of other just general nastiness over the last year.
What's the upshot of this? Is this, it's some noise, it's some news about the X Corporation, but this isn't going to affect them or the platform much, is it?
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, this is America. You can sue over anything. That doesn't mean that a lawsuit like this will go forward. It'll get attention, but, whether there's anything to back it up, I don't see it. That's why judges review these things and decide whether they can go through.
Are there any new numbers about advertising or revenue in general for Twitter, for X?
No, as a private company, they don't need to reveal numbers. They don't have to. Elon Musk will say things from time to time, that they're breaking even or that it's doing better, things like that. But, there's really no way to verify that and no way to quantify, how much money they may or may not be making.
Mm. Talk to me about Meta. It's in the news, maybe not for the same sort of reason. What's the latest on that?
Well, this also has to do with kind of speech and advertising in a sense. They are blocking access to news links on Facebook and Instagram now in Canada because Parliament in Canada has passed a law saying that news organizations like ours need to be compensated for, what's on those social media networks. Companies like Meta and Google, too, don't agree with this. They're pulling stuff down rather than negotiating with news organizations for the use of their material. This is another thing where, we're just going to have to see where it plays out. But, you know, Meta and Google are concerned that there's going to be legislation in the U.S. and other places as well, and this could get very expensive for them.
No kidding. And I think it would, I don't want to say gut what they do, because it's more than that, but good Lord, I think a lot of us appreciate how Google, certainly Meta, aggregate sites and dump information into your onto your page. And if CNET is going to have to be compensated for the use of that information, and everybody else has to be compensated, either we're going to get a lot less information or it's going to get a lot more expensive. This strikes me as being a bit of a sea change.
I mean, it could be. And, you know, we have to look at it from the news organization perspective. You know, it's been rough for a long time now. People aren't buying newspapers. They're not buying ads, you know, print ads, things like that, like they used to. You know, certainly putting things on social media boosts traffic, but news organizations are providing content. This is where people get their news.
Yep.
News organizations need to make money, too, or we're not going to last either.
Would this affect X, then? I mean, would they say that for the New York Times to be posted on Twitter? Of course, the New York Times is doing it. But, I mean, would the New York Times tell Elon Musk, you got to pay us if you want to host our information?
I mean, any news organization, ideally what the Canadian law calls for is for negotiations to take place, and this could be kind of time consuming because there's just lots of media out there even now. And if, you know, agreements can't be reached, that it would go to binding arbitration. But, wow, you know, it's a lot to deal with, and it definitely could spark some changes. Twitter, on the other hand, I don't think it's that big of an issue because so many news organizations have pulled out of Twitter just because of all the drama and all of the criticism and, you know, discrimination that Elon Musk has kind of put on news organizations in recent months.
I know a lot of people that don't subscribe to magazines and newspapers anymore, and they say, I just go online and get it for free. And I you know, that's not sustainable, and we all suffer for that. So if there's a way to compensate these organizations, I'm not going to bat for Meta, but I am for WGN Radio and the Chicago Tribune and some of our great resources in this city.
Or
CNET, then I think that's fair. I think that's reasonable. I may be an outlier there. I don't know. Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at CNET. Bree, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for dialing in to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Alexander mentioned a little while ago it's National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day, week, or month. I think every day is. One of the best things to go to me with a chocolate chip cookie, a nice cold, I like it. Chocolate chip cookie is a nice hot cup of coffee. And August is also National Coffee Month. We're going to talk a little bit here about the business of roasting coffee in Chicago with Tim Coonan. He's the founder of Big Shoulders Coffee. Maybe you've been to some of his shops. Hi, Tim. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
Tell me about your business.
Okay, so we're a 10-year-old hospitality company. You know, we're a company where leadership and product come together to create a hospitality experience for our employees. I said our employees, and I didn't mention coffee in there at all, did I? my wife and I are the founders of Big Shoulders Coffee, and we kind of have this attitude of of hospitality. I'm a former chef. Trisha spent her college years at U of M working in some really nice restaurants there. We met at Spiaggia here in Chicago, where I was the chef de cuisine for many years, and she was a server and then became a manager. And we, like a lot of people that work in restaurants, we're spending long hours together, and we sparked a romance, and we've been together successfully thus far. I think we're on year 21 in about 10 days here. So, coffee, we identified, we both love coffee, and we identified coffee as an opportunity to start a business about 12 years ago. So at the time, I was teaching at Washburn Culinary Institute, and as a culinary instructor, and food service, as some of your listeners might or might not know, but food service is a pretty tough gig. It's in a lot of ways, it's a young person's gig, long hours on your feet, and a lot of weekends, late hours, not necessarily great for people that want to have a healthy relationship or even a family. So we, Trisha and I have both. We have a healthy relationship and a family. But we wanted to, we love hospitality. It really speaks to our DNA. And we wanted to also teach and grow young people's idea of hospitality. So the idea of hospitality for us, if we can't take care of each other first, then we sure as heck won't be able to take care of strangers that walk in the front door. So, hospitality, in fact, hospitality in Greek translates from philoxenia, philo meaning love and xenia meaning strangers. And I think we need a lot more of that here in this world.
Yeah. Wait a minute now. Hold on. I get the vibe for the business. Let's talk about coffee for a second. Are you ready to do that?
Let's do that. Yeah, we kind of lay the groundwork for kind of the why we do it. But yeah, let's talk about the product itself. So we've been, I started the business in my garage, roasting coffee on a cast iron antique popcorn popper that I stole from my mom. And it started out kind of a bit of a hobby. I'd been a home coffee roaster for a long, long time, giving it away as gifts for family and friends during the holidays. People really responded to it. It became a little bit of a side hustle that I had 12 years ago. And when our daughter was very, very young, we were a one-car family. I would deliver a bag of freshly roasted coffee to about 60 customers every week. They'd leave me $10 under their geranium, and I'd leave them a bag of freshly roasted coffee. And that's really the genesis and the origin story of Big Shoulders Coffee.
I understand that you roast the coffee, but I don't know how I would know. How is your coffee different or better than coffee I would get at Caribou or Starbucks or Jewel, for that matter? You're taking coffee beans and you're roasting them. I don't know what I just said, but I mean, how do you distinguish yourself? How do you make a better roast?
We're doing what you said, and really, so I come at it from a culinary perspective, and not to discount what other people are doing in the business. I mean, there's some very large roasters, of course, and there's some really good smaller roasters. I like to think that we're amongst some of the best roasters in Chicago. I mean, certainly we've gotten accolades for our work.
But what does that business do? Like, so you put beans in a kettle and what? Put it on medium? What does roasting mean?
Yeah, it's not quite putting them in a slow pot or whatever doing that. And so we've got a specialized machine. We've got two of them. We can roast about 600 pounds of coffee per hour, and we do so 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and we're doing it about 12 hours a day. So we buy green coffee. So coffee itself, it looks like a cherry. In fact, the fruit is called coffee cherries. So it's harvested from a bush, from a shrub, kind of in this between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn around the globe. So there's about 60 different origins for coffee. Some that we're more familiar with, others maybe we're not. Colombia, Brazil, Guatemala, Kenya, Ethiopia, the birthplace of coffee. So we buy this coffee that's harvested, and we have some partners, and we rely on some importing partners from that handle kind of the logistics of it. We've got a couple of direct relationships. But we have, we look for and we find really great coffee. We put it in this machine, this roaster. One of them can roast 70 pounds. The other can roast 30 pounds. And it takes about 15, 16 minutes. Some roasters do it quicker. Some do it slower. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to basically caramelize sugar. So so what makes us different is that we're actually doing it a little bit slower, and I like to think we're paying a lot more attention to what's happening inside that machine.
I wanted to mention that you guys are in Westtown on Chicago. You're in the Gold Coast on State. You're in the Loop Lake. You're on Jackson in the city. You are on Wacker. You're also at Midway at Terminal Airport, Airport Terminal A. Do I find you, do you sell it packaged in grocery stores or locations outside of your shops?
We do. We've got all the Chicagoland Whole Food markets, and we're out of the region as well, and in some other Whole Food markets. But every Chicagoland Whole Food market, Mariano's, Fresh Thyme, Dom's, some of Chicago's best restaurants serve and brew our coffee. Avec, Publican, Cooper's Hawk, Egg Harbor, Little Goat Diner. Huh. So we have a lot of different kind of channels for how we operate. And then we also sell directly the freshest and best and most interesting coffees are, you know, directly from us on our website. But we're the last year about this time, we were crowned the winner of the best coffee roaster for North America during the Golden Bean Roasting Competition. We just sent our coffee off to defend our title. I'm heading out to Columbus next week for that. Food and Wine magazine has picked us as the best coffee in Illinois. We've been noted as one of the top 25 coffee roasters in the U.S. And we have multiple accolades from Coffee Review for 90-plus point coffees. So coffee is really something that, you know, it's really a personal thing. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to brew it. And you mentioned hot coffee, which I love. I drink hot coffee year-round, even on a hot August day. But the cold beverages from either the espresso-based or cold brew is really emerging. In fact, I read an article this morning that cold coffee drinks are comprising about 75% of Starbucks coffee sales, and that really resonates with what we're finding in our own cafes as well.
I'm out of time, Tim, but I wanted to mention one more time that Big Shoulders Coffee, that's the website, bigshoulderscoffee.com. We can buy it online. You can also find the locations throughout Chicagoland. I'm really jonesing for a cup of your coffee right now.
All right.
So congratulations.
Get over to State Street. Thank you so much, John.
You're not far from us. Let us know how you do in that competition.
Nope. Hey, I will. Thank you so much and have a great day. Thanks for having me as your guest.
Tim Coonan is the founder of Big Shoulders Coffee. It's National Coffee Month. It's time for more business news. There's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Grubhub has announced a $300,000 partnership with a Westside incubator that helps restaurant and food service startups. As part of the deal, Grubhub will also sponsor a pitch competition with the Hatchery Chicago, and the winner will get free access to the company's private kitchen there. Restaurant entrepreneurs will also be provided with educational material and support for things like payroll and repairs. Grubhub says it's committed to giving back to Chicago, its home market. The company behind the immersive Vincent Van Gogh exhibit in Chicago has filed for bankruptcy protection. Toronto-based Lighthouse Immersive will continue operating after securing temporary financing. In 2021, the company opened Lighthouse Art Space Chicago in the former Germania Club on the near north side. The Van Gogh exhibit is its most popular exhibit, but it has rotating shows nationwide, including Immersive King Tut, a Claude Monet experience, and Disney Display. Lighthouse Immersive has 24 locations in the U.S. and Canada. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. Tomorrow is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day, and is it okay if I call you our resident cookie expert?
It's fine, yes.
Of course, that voice belongs to Johnny Putman of Steve and Johnny, who says there are three types of chocolate chip cookie fans.
There are those who love a soft cookie. There are those that like a little harder cookie. The third class that likes a snappy cookie actually is us. We want to use both hands to break it to get a snap.
She'll be talking about her snappy and undefeated gluten-free chocolate chocolate chip cookie recipe after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Johnny has been baking cookies for a few years, starting out with Toll House cookies.
And I started baking those when I was like 8 years old, and the chips were available and the recipe was on the back, and it just became a standard.
But her recipe had to change when Steve was diagnosed with celiac disease.
I have been baking gluten-free for over 20 years now. Gradually, over the years, we got to the point where we have tons of choices for flour. And my number one choice is King Arthur's Measure for Measure gluten-free flour, available in a lot of stores like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and Jewel, also available on Amazon.
So Johnny perfected her recipe and remains undefeated in taste tests against many of the commercial brands.
Well, we have in fact tried Glutino, Midel, Enjoy Life, Trader Joe's, Sweet Lauren's, Tate's, and there's a brand new one that's on the market. It's Mightylicious. Beautiful packaging in bags. It's a soft, very soft cookie.
Okay, now, can you tell the difference between regular cookies and your gluten-free cookies, Johnny?
I can't tell the difference. Steve can't tell the difference. And in fact, over the years, I have fed probably hundreds of people at the radio station, and no one has ever known that they were eating gluten-free cookies.
And to celebrate tomorrow's national holiday, she is sharing her recipe on our website.
And if you want a crispy cookie, I give you tips on how to do that.
Thanks, Johnny.
Okay, take care.
From the farm to your belly, today's National Watermelon Day. It's also National IPA Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
The latest results are in from Bankrate, best states to retire in. Illinois is number 17 on the list. Number one is Iowa. Our neighbor Missouri is number 4. The worst state to retire in is Alaska. But 49 is New York and 48 is California. Wow. Alex Gailey is a senior data reporter there. Hi, Alex. You're on WGN.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
What were the criteria?
So we looked at 14 different data points across several categories. We bucketed them into affordability, overall well-being, quality and cost of healthcare, weather, and crime. And the category that we weighed the heaviest was affordability, to reflect the challenges that so many Americans face in today's economy.
I'm looking at the list. I don't know that you would say one section of the country does better than another. I mean, Missouri and Iowa are in the Midwest, but Delaware's 2, and West Virginia, of all places, which has many challenges, is number 3. How about that?
Yeah. You know, if you look at the top 5 and the top bottom, it is split geographically. We see states in the Midwest and the South in the top 5, and then states in the bottom 5 are mainly in the Northeast and the West, and that really does come down primarily to the and cost of living. You know, what makes Iowa or, you know, even West Virginia, despite their issues, their individual issues as states, is that, you know, what makes them desirable for retirees is that low cost of living. Retirees are able to stretch their retirement savings a lot further in states that have lower cost of living, which is why you see Illinois in the top 20. It's number 17, and it ranks where it does because of its lower cost of living, not just housing, but also healthcare, food, transportation, utilities, and such.
A lot of us think the crime in the Chicago area, which is how Illinois goes, is our Achilles heel. But you have us as right smack dab in the middle, number 25. So I guess we could do better. But 17, we kick ourselves so much in this state. I'm happy to see we're at 17. Florida is 8 and Hawaii is 9. That's interesting because Florida is relatively or can be inexpensive. No state income tax. Hawaii is a very expensive place.
Yes, Hawaii is very expensive. The reason you see it near the top is because it ranks so well in those other categories, but you do see the high cost of living in Hawaii. And then Florida is really kind of actually more in the middle of the pack in terms of affordability, but it did have a couple other lower rankings in the other categories. So, you know, kind of all balanced out and ended up in the 8th spot. So, you know, Florida is traditionally seen as a popular retirement destination, and it continues to be. But what our study, the goal of our study is to really question the traditional narrative of where you should retire in the U.S., knowing that we have an affordability crisis across the U.S. just in terms of housing, but also we know that inflation has really hit Americans' budgets hard the last 2 years. And so that's really affected older Americans' ability to save up for retirement.
Your survey shows that more than half of Americans, 55%, say their retirement savings are not where they need to be, and a third of us say they're at a crisis point. The list is really interesting. Wisconsin is 12 and Michigan is 13. So the Midwest represents pretty well in the top 17, where Illinois is. Now, you can read the full list at bankrate.com. The best and worst states to retire in 2023 ranked. Alex, very interesting. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.